Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello, I'm Pat Rulo, your hostess and the voice for patient safety. Welcome back. I'm looking forward to our time together once again. I hope you had a good week. I know I had an interesting Saturday last week. I've told you before that we have rescued 11 feral cats and that our friend Paul from Clarendon Barns in Chardon built a nice outdoor shed for them to keep them warm during the winter. Well, that morning I opened the door to feed them breakfast and no one was there. The bowls were on the floor, their Rubbermaid beds were thrown around, the heater was upside down, and there was blood on the table. I ran outside of the shed to call for them, and only one eventually showed up, which is really unusual, because typically they're all running around, starving from the night before. Well, I waited for a while as it snowed on me in my pajamas, and I watched this lone cat run into the woods. So I followed her, and thank goodness I did. Sure enough, she led me to the other cats, who were rallying around the bleeding one, all covered in the snow. I saw a rope, something that looked like a rope, under the branches, and when I reached to pick him up, he ran. And that's when I saw that he had a bungee cord stuck inside his mouth. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the evening before, while carrying a big box from the car to the house, I tripped and fell and did some crazy painful damage to my foot. So here I am, freezing, hobbling through the woods with a cane, no less, trying to catch this poor guy. And luckily, he finally gave up and let me pick him up. Thankfully, I was able to delicately remove the sharp cord from his mouth, and then we just sat in the garage, in the cold garage, hugging and purring for the next hour and a half. I am so amazed that the other end of that bungee cord didn't get stuck on a tree limb. That could have been devastating for that poor little guy. Well, what a morning for all of us, so hopefully this week will be calmer. Anyway, enough of my cat stories. Let's head into the show. Today's guest is a young teenager with a rare disease diagnosis who has used that to become quite the patient activist, working to improve the patient experience. So that is coming up. And then speaking of the patient experience, I have something quite surprising to share with you. So let's get started. Because right now, it's time for the hospital hazard of the week. I read something stunning this week, and I had to share. A study, the first of its kind, held at Massachusetts General Hospital and published in Anesthesiology, the official journal of the American Society of Anesthesiologists, revealed that 50% of surgeries had medication issues. The first study to measure medication errors and adverse drug events immediately before, during, and right after a surgical procedure has found that some sort of a mistake or an adverse event occurred in 1 out of 2 surgeries. Oh, that's a whopping 50%. How do you like those chances? The study of more than 275 operations at Mass General Hospital also found that a third of the errors resulted in adverse drug events or harm to patients. Now, given that Massachusetts General is a national leader in patient safety and had already implemented approaches to improve safety in the operating room, these medication error rates are probably at least as high at many other hospitals. So why in the world would this be happening with such frequency? The article explains that while drug orders on inpatient floors go through a process in which they are checked several times by different providers, such as the ordering physician, the pharmacist, and the nurse who is administering the medications, the speed with which the condition of a patient in the operating room can change does not allow time for that sort of double or triple checking during a surgical procedure. From the time a provider took responsibility for a patient in the preoperative area until the patient arrived in the recovery room or intensive care, the observers documented every medication administration, including any medication errors. They also reviewed chart data from the hospital's anesthesia management system for all patients whose care had been observed. And overall, it was determined that 124 of the 277 observed operations included at least one medication error or adverse drug event, and almost 80% of those events were determined to have been preventable. The most frequently observed errors were mistakes in labeling, incorrect dosage, neglecting to treat a problem indicated by the patient's vital signs, and finally, documentation errors. Of all the observed adverse drug events and the medication errors that could have resulted in patient harm, 30% were considered significant, 69% serious, and only less than 2% life-threatening, and none were fatal. Medication errors and adverse drug events were more common with longer procedures, especially those lasting longer than 6 hours and involving 13 or more medication administrations. So, after hearing this, what's the takeaway? Stay out of the hospital if you can. But we all know that's not always possible. And you can't stay awake during a surgical procedure to ask questions, nor can you have an advocate with you. Although, that could be the seed of an idea for a new, highly trained profession. An independent, highly trained, licensed in surgery patient advocate. Just an idea. But really, what can a patient do to avoid being the one out of every two surgeries? I don't know. Maybe have a candid conversation about this prior to surgery with the surgical team. You could say, look, I know that a medication error is highly likely during my surgical procedure. What steps do you take to avoid this? And for sure, I'd have a little chat with your anesthesiologist and ask this question. Will you be with me the entire time before, during, and after my procedure? Because this kind of continuity of care does not always take place. And this is exactly what happened to my mom when she was having a heart attack for 9 hours after shoulder surgery and the anesthesiologist was nowhere to be found on a timely basis. So here's what you need to know. And this is very important. In many hospitals, one physician anesthesiologist often supervises multiple cases that are staffed by nurse anesthetists. This model of care is called the anesthesia care team. Typically, the anesthesiologist makes rounds from one operating room to the next, checking on each case frequently. So it is very likely that your anesthesiologist may leave your operating room. Now, you have a right to be informed about the plan of care. So ask up front, will a physician anesthesiologist be present for the entire case? Or will he or she be supervising more than one case? Will a physician anesthesiologist be involved at all? And that's a valid question because in California, for example, there is no requirement for a nurse anesthetist to be supervised by physicians or even to consult with a physician about patient care. Oh, and here's a real shocker, a little known fact, that in some hospitals, surgeons are allowed to run 2 or even 3 rooms simultaneously. It's called concurrency. Kind of like double booking, overlapping surgeries, doing 2 or more surgeries at the same time. And I have to ask, are these doctors scrubbing before and after they jog from operating room to operating room? Sounds like an infection control nightmare to me. And does the patient know that their doctor is in 2 places at the same time? And what happens if the other patient has a complication and your surgeon spends more time in the other room? Where does that leave you? In anesthesia hell? All of this is very misleading and, quite honestly, dangerous. Yet the patient has no idea what's going on. So why is this happening? Well, because patients don't know about it and therefore don't ask. Is it legal for a surgeon to say he or she did the operation and sign off on it for billing purposes, even if he or she was just in and out supervising a trainee? Is it legal for the anesthesiologist to introduce him or herself to you, giving you the false impression that he or she will actually be administering and monitoring your anesthesia, when in fact, he or she may only be supervising nurse anesthetists? This is shady stuff, if you ask me. So next time you or someone you know is going under the knife, always ask your surgeon well ahead of your operation if he or she will be performing other surgeries at the same time as yours. And if you hear that this is the practice of your surgeon and you're not comfortable with it, well, you can discuss it with your surgeon or look for a qualified surgeon at other hospitals. When you sign the informed consent form, you should be signing a document that truly spells out the true details. And with that consent form in mind, you actually can write on your consent form that you do not want a trainee performing any parts of the surgery without direct in-person supervision of an attending surgeon, and the same for the anesthesiologist. You know, I always love it when researchers conduct these studies, come up with shocking findings, and then conclude, well, at least we now have some idea as to where to try to make improvements. Continuity of care might be a sensible place to start. Doctors and anesthesiologists running about from operating room to operating room, from patient to patient, from case to case, answering pages, having random conversations that have nothing to do with your specific surgery, is simply asking for trouble. And we don't need a survey or a study to figure out how to put an end to that. So I say, have a sit-down, one-on-one conversation with your surgical team prior to surgery so everyone is on the same page. And should something go wrong, at least you'll know where to start looking. After the show, be sure to visit the website speakupandstayalive.com for more life-saving information. Plus, that's where you can purchase the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate, Hospital Survival Guide. Bring the book to the hospital with you. It's the best way to stand out and in a positive way. And remember, we donate 2 handmade pillowcases to a local veteran's shelter for every book sold with your name on it as the donor. So for a mere $20, you benefit, and so does some well-deserving warrior. Give a meaningful and useful gift that really says, I care. Give the gift of healthcare safety. Purchase the book, the patient safety logs, and throw in some of those icebreaker cards. It's a one-size-fits-all present that everybody needs. You can order online at speakupandstayalive.com, or you can request by email at speak@speakupandstayalive.com, or call me 440-725-5462.
In your face. All over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7. You're listening to the hottest.
SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com. That's SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com.
Welcome to Those Radio Kids, an internet-based radio network founded to give a voice to young people all over the world with a special reach to those who are experiencing health and medical problems, are disabled, homeless, or have other life-altering problems with the goal of lending a hand. If you or someone you know are under the age of 21 and have something to say to help enrich the life of another child by sharing your patient experience, your life experience, thoughts, suggestions, or your talent, we want to hear from you. Just visit the website, thoseradiokids.com. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, and today I have a special young lady whom I actually had the pleasure to meet in person a while back when both she and I were speakers at the Cleveland Clinic's Patient Experience Summit. And yes, my new friend has certainly had her share of patient experiences. She is Morgan Gleason. Her story begins when she was 11 years old and was diagnosed with a systemic autoimmune disease called juvenile dermatomyositis. The main symptoms are weak or painful muscles, skin rash, fatigue, and fever. This disease is very rare and only affects 1 to 3 in a million people per year. Morgan has been very active and quite vocal, expressing her thoughts on what is right and what is wrong with today's healthcare world, and that is exactly how I came to initially find her. I was doing some research for a show segment on alarm fatigue and how all of the beeping of alarms in a hospital setting can actually worsen the outcome for patients, not to mention jangling the nerves of the hospital staff. And that's when I came across a refreshing and honest YouTube video titled, Why Does Everything Beep? Morgan gave her candid opinion on hospital room alarms, which led me to another video of hers called I Am a Patient and I Need to Be Heard, which has received over 56,000 views. She interviewed with us a few years ago, but since then has done so much to improve the patient experience and patient safety that I felt it important to have her back again, this time to not only share her journey, but also to give some advice to other young people and their families who may also be going through difficult medical issues. So with that, let's hear from Morgan herself. Welcome to Those Radio Kids in the Show, Morgan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. You are an inspiration for sure.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Well, let's start by sharing a bit of your journey and go back to when you were 11 years old, just prior to your diagnosis. How did you discover your diagnosis?
So when I was diagnosed, I was 11. It was right after my sixth grade year. I had been a competitive cheerleader for about 5 years or so, and I used to be able to do flips and twists through the air, and I was really active and super strong, and I gradually got weaker and weaker to the point where I couldn't do any of my tumbling passes anymore, and I got to the point where my mom could hold a handstand longer than I could, and I was also having a lot of trouble walking up the stairs, and I would fall asleep at the gym, which I never used to do. My nickname was the Energizer Bunny, and I had a rash on my hands and my joints and my elbows and knees, and at first it started on my elbows and knees, and I thought it was just rug burn from the mat, but it developed into being on all of my joints, and when my mom finally realized that it was all on all of my joints, she took me to the dermatologist. And that's when the dermatologist thought it was psoriasis, and they wanted to do a biopsy to get insurance to approve the treatment for psoriasis. Mm-hmm. And when the biopsy came back, juvenile dermatomyositis, it was all shocking, and we didn't really know what to do.
Sure, that's a huge bunch of words. You didn't even know what that meant.
Yeah, we'd never heard of it. We didn't even know how to pronounce it. We didn't know how to spell it. It was a whole journey.
Yeah, it's juvenile dermatomyositis. So once you were diagnosed with that, then what happened?
So the next step was I had to book an appointment with a pediatric rheumatologist, and I started getting a lot of tests, and such as a MRI and a lot of labs. I had to take like 20 tubes of blood, and I had never been exposed to that, so that was really scary. Mm-hmm. I think I'd only gotten my blood drawn once when I was a little kid. And so all of a sudden I was having to give like all of these tests that was so strange and new. And it took 3 months to get an appointment with the rheumatologist. They said it was June 18th when I was diagnosed of 2010. And they couldn't see me until September 30th, I think, was the date. And so my mom found an online message board for people with my disease. It was called CureJM. And it's a group where people would give advice, and we kind of talk about it, and we have a conference every year, and it's really helpful to have that support group. And so my mom posted on the message board, my daughter was just diagnosed, and we really don't know what to do. The rheumatologist said they couldn't see us for 3 months, and what would you guys suggest us doing? And so the board had somebody call within an hour of it being posted.
Wow.
And it ended up being that there are three specialists, and the one that they recommended me go to was in Chicago. And she said, my mom emailed the person in Chicago, and within like an hour, I think the doctor emailed us back and said, we can see you on July 15th or something, and we'll see you then. And there wasn't any other option. It was just, we'll see you then.
Mm.
And so we booked a flight to Chicago, and I was starting on prednisone and Cellcept and a lot of steroids. That was basically what happened.
Wow. So thankfully you found that online message board, and that just gives a shout out to reaching out to other people and finding a community to support, as you suggested.
Yes. And that community has been extremely helpful. And I had never met anybody with my disease. It's extremely rare, like only 3,000 kids in the United States have it. And so it was really helpful.
Absolutely. And that's the point of this radio program, Those Radio Kids, is to give that bit of support. So everything you're saying today on this interview can help another person, another child and another family realize that they are not alone. So I appreciate you being part of this community, the folks that you haven't even met yet. Well, now let's talk about relationships, because I would imagine that when you're diagnosed with something such as this, and then you're taking medications like prednisone that probably have some side effects, how did that at all affect your relationship with your friends, or did it?
It did, definitely, because as I said before, I was a cheerleader, and most of all of my friends, I think all of them were from that. And so once I was not able to do that anymore, once you kind of drift, you don't have that thing in common anymore. I lost a lot of my friends He just kind of drifted. Mm-hmm. And you obviously don't understand what it's like to have a chronic disease unless you have actually experienced it firsthand. I mean, we were in middle school, and the prednisone made my face blow up, like, mm-hmm. call it moon face. So that was fun, especially being in middle school.
Oh, yeah.
And so my friends kind of didn't really understand what was going on. It was really different for them to see me change. Like, I used to be super skinny, partially because the disease affected my GI system, and I would eat, like, 2 bites and not get hungry. So I was really skinny, and I was an athlete, and then I went to being super blown up, and it was just hard to keep friends, but I luckily found one really great friend in middle school, and she was really accepting, and she was super nice, and it was really great to have that one friend who really kind of supported me through the whole thing.
And maybe all it takes is one person.
Right. You really just need one person who's willing to be with you and understand you. And she even came to the hospital with me we had a science fair project or something to do, and so she came and sat with me in the hospital. And we FaceTimed with the class, and it was really great to have that person be there.
How awesome is that? That's going to be a lifelong friend.
Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Which then takes me to family. Obviously, it changes the family relationship. Talk a little bit about that.
I have 3 step-siblings, and we were not exactly close, but we weren't like drift. I mean, we were close. So I think it was just hard for them for me to now be like the center of attention. Me have to go through all of these tests, and even if it's not for the like right kind of attention, like I was still getting more attention than them because of special circumstances, obviously. And so I think it was just hard on them, but they were really accepting about it. And they were, my stepbrother he still to this day wears a Cure Jam bracelet, and it's really nice to have that support. And then obviously my parents were super great, and my mom especially. She comes to every treatment. And I think my family was really worried about it, and they came. So my mom has come to all of the conferences, and my grandparents came, and it's been really great to have such a supporting family throughout this whole thing.
Well, I've met your mom, and she is an awesome lady, and it's so nice now that you are really close and bonded and friends.
Yes, we're really close now.
I can tell. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's really great.
Now, is there anything that the school or teachers could do to help improve the life of a student with a chronic illness?
My main thing is I would go to all of my teachers in the beginning of the year, and I would tell them what's going on and why I might miss a lot of school. And all of them were pretty great about it. Like, they were all really understanding, and they were really concerned about me, and they'd always ask how I was feeling and everything. And so I think my main thing is just be understanding and be supporting and do whatever you can. Like, one of my teachers would email me homework, and I took a final or something in the hospital because he emailed it to me, and I was able to do that. So if you can just be accommodating at all and be helpful, and also if you could give, like my friend, the one I was talking about earlier, my teacher would give some of her my homework, and she'd bring it to me, and we'd work on it. And so just kind of be accommodating and mm-hmm. be supporting and understanding.
Sure, just a little bit of empathy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, here's a big question. What advice would you give to another person your age who has just received a life-altering diagnosis?
I think I'm going to go a little bit cliche here, but just say be strong and try to learn everything you can about it. And just, you don't have to tell everybody, but sometimes it helps to let people know what's going on. And also, like I said before, find a bunch of other people who you can connect with, maybe somebody who has the same disease or whatever is going on with you. Maybe just find a bunch of people who understand, and just be strong and keep your head up and keep being determined to get through it. Because me, I think it's definitely changed my life, but I think it's changed it for the better, because through all of this, I'm able to help other people with their problems too, and also being the patient experience and speaking at all these conferences. And honestly, I don't think I would take it back if I were given the option now. I think it's really made me mature as a person and grow. So I think it would just be good to be positive throughout it all and be optimistic, and don't ever let yourself get down.
Oh, Beautiful, beautiful advice. And I like what you said right at the very beginning, is to know all you can about your condition or your disease, because I think that kind of information is empowering to understand and understand the research and why you're taking the meds you are and be a part of that whole process. And I know you agree with that.
Yes, of course. It's really helpful to be able to, and sometimes it's easy to have this information to kind of, if you don't want to say everything about it, you can kind of come up with roundabout ways, and you'll learn how to talk to people and get them to understand you better.
Absolutely. And be an ambassador, as you have become as well.
But yes, I think that's been really great for me.
Well, let's go back for a moment to your original YouTube videos. What prompted you to make that very first video?
When I had gotten meningitis as a side effect of one of my treatments, IVIG, and it was aseptic meningitis. And so with meningitis, you have excruciating headaches, and I was also getting high-dose steroids to make me not be able to sleep. Well, it was to help the headache, but and it caused me to not be able to fall asleep easily. And so I'd finally fall asleep at around 3 a.m., and I was hospitalized for about 4 days when I made the video. And I was getting really frustrated with not being able to sleep and everybody coming in and flipping on the lights. And just, it was really frustrating, and I was getting angry with how I was being treated as a patient. Mm-hmm. And so I started ranting to my mom one day, and she videoed it, and the video happened.
And you just got thousands and thousands of people watching that video, primarily because people agreed with it. It's like, yes, I feel the same way. So how did that response propel you to take positive action and become the advocate and the speaker for improving the patient experience?
It was really amazing. I remember sitting in the hospital and just watching the views go up, and I made a Twitter for my business thing I had going on, and it was really awesome to be able to see that positive impact, and it inspired me. I got asked to speak at the Cleveland Clinic, and that's where it all started. That was my first speaking thing, and it was in front of a bunch of people, and that was the most I'd ever spoken in front of. The most I'd ever spoken in front of was, before that, was my class of about 20 people, and so that was really awesome to have that positive impact, and it really encouraged me. And it really encouraged me to keep going and keep helping people, because I was also getting a bunch of emails from other patients, and they were asking me for advice or telling me their stories. And one lady even decided that she was going to switch her oncologist because she decided that she wasn't being treated how she wanted to be treated. And that was really great to hear, because I helped at least one person have a better patient experience.
Mm-hmm. And I was there for that conference, and I was there for your talk. You were up on that main stage, and there were like hundreds and hundreds of people in that room, and I didn't realize that was your very first time in front of a large audience. You were awesome and excellent and really made an impact. I was so impressed. All right, we might have again touched on this, but in wrapping up, imagine that sitting across from you right now is another 11-year-old freshly diagnosed with an illness. Briefly, what would you say to him or her?
I would say that it's going to seem awful now and super scary, but it will get better, and you will be okay, and you'll be fine, and you'll learn to have a new outlook on it like I have, and you just have to be positive and just try to look at it in the most positive light you can. And again, it might take a couple years, but I think you will get there, and it will be okay.
Oh, that's why I love you. Well, where can we learn more about you and what you do? And if another young person or family member would like to connect with you, where can they find you? How can they reach you?
You can reach me at my email, morgangleason@gmail.com, or my website. I have a website also, morgangleason.com. And my Twitter is Morgan_Gleason. So
okay.
The main ones.
MorganGleason.com. And you're also available to speak to healthcare groups and hospitals as well, correct?
Yes, I am. Yep. I love speaking if anybody would like to have me.
I don't see why they wouldn't. It's a fresh perspective, and it's an honest and real perspective, and we need that. We need to hear that, especially when it's surrounding the patient experience and patient safety. You do a great job with that. Morgan, what a pleasure and an inspiration, and how wise of you to take a difficult experience and use it to improve the system, and most importantly, to help others to survive it. So I encourage those listening who are dealing with a health issue or know of a young person in their family who needs some support, to visit Morgan's website, morgangleason.com, and it's MorganGleason, morgangleason.com. I will have that on our website as well so folks can continue to find you. Morgan, thank you for all that you do, and we always wish you the very best.
I love talking to you. You're really awesome. So,
well, I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. Visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rouleau, also author of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, available at our website, speakupandstayalive.com, speakupandstayalive.com. And today we are heading into the seemingly foolish portion of the show. It's game time, and I've got a good crowd with me today. We are going to play Jeopardy. Are you in Jeopardy or are you safe? The Welsh Home Edition. So let's introduce our contestants. Who do we have here?
My name's Sarah Cook and I am the administrator of the Welsh Home.
Sarah, welcome.
Thank you, Pat.
And?
My name is Lauren Teschner and I am the community and professional relations liaison at the Welsh Home.
Welcome, Lauren. I love liaison. And?
I'm Bob, a former financial planner from Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Yay, Bob. So glad you're here. And?
I'm Eric. I'm a regionally famous radio producer from Northeast Ohio, and I guess I'll say I also j'adore la liaison, or however you might say that in French.
I knew you and I are always on the same page. He and I were fans of the Naked Mole Rat and Liaison. I wonder if there's a Liaison Naked Mole Rat.
I think we ought to have a question on the Naked Mole Rat.
I'm not prepared for him today.
really caught these girls off guard.
I didn't want to shock
that.
Our friends. All right, guys.
Maybe there's a zoo that has a Naked Mole Rat Liaison position available.
There are Naked Mole Rats at the Cleveland Zoo.
Did you see them?
I've seen them multiple times.
Lauren took a group of, this is a perfect segue, Lauren, you walked right into it. Lauren took a group of senior residents from the Welsh Home in Rocky River, Ohio, to the zoo, the Cleveland Zoo, and had a fun experience where you got what? You took a selfie with a giraffe?
Yes, I did.
And what happened?
The giraffe headbutted me after the selfie was taken.
There you go. This is what can happen when you...
It's a workplace hazard.
You know? It's called workman's comp claim.
No. I did it all on my own.
Wait a minute.
And I took one of the team there.
Oh, my gosh. Now, if you had been visiting the Naked Mole Rat, you would not have been headbutted.
No, they are behind a screen.
Oh, poor guys. Well, Eric has a Naked Mole Rat plushie.
Oh, I'll have to see that later, Eric.
Getting personal here. All right, guys. Let's head into our game. Are you in Jeopardy or are you safe? I'm going to give you some scenarios and you have to decide if you would be in Jeopardy or safe. Now, obviously, I'm not going to give you all of the information you need to know. Just take what I give you and come up with your own answer. But remember, it is the Welsh Home Edition. All right.
These people will compete today on...
Are you in Jeopardy or are you safe? Question number one. You are having chest pains and head to the emergency room. Several hours later, you're taken to a room in the cardiac unit. Your friend, who listens to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, every week, reminds you to ask your doctor if you are actually being admitted to the hospital or if you are under observation. You dismiss that suggestion. You surely don't want to be admitted. By not asking this question every day, are you in jeopardy or are you safe? Let's start with you, Sarah.
I would say you are in jeopardy because if you are under the observation stay, your insurance may not cover the stay as fully as if they would if you were actually admitted. It could also potentially jeopardize your ability to go to a long-term healthcare facility.
Interesting. What do you say about that, Lauren? Are you in jeopardy or are you safe?
You are definitely in jeopardy.
All right. You agree with
everything Sarah said was spot on.
Now, Bob, you have no choice as to the answer here, do you?
Well, first of all, I didn't hear these questions before I got here.
Okay.
But I'm going to say you're in jeopardy, definitely in jeopardy. I'm going to follow the ladies' lead. Ladies' lead.
Smart man.
Yes, he is. What about you, Eric? Duh.
Yeah, how could I say safe after hearing all that?
No brainer, folks. Most patients would regard this as meaningless, the seemingly slight distinction between the two labels. After all, you're getting the same kind of care, so what do you care what you're being called? But it can have consequences. As Sarah said, under the rules, Medicare picks up the whole tab for the first 20 days, I think,
correct,
in the approved skilled nursing facility for rehab or other care, but only if someone has spent at least 3 full days in the hospital as an admitted patient. So if instead a patient has been under observation for all or part of that time, he or she is responsible for the entire cost of rehab. Mm-hmm. Big major question and a lot to know here. Mm-hmm. If folks have questions, I'm sure they can contact you at the Welsh Home.
Yes, of course they can.
Phone number?
440-331-0420.
Little shameless advertising there, folks. All right. Question number 2. You are diagnosed with CHF, congestive heart failure. Congestive heart failure is a condition in which the heart's function as a pump is inadequate to meet the body's needs. Now, your doctor suggests that you monitor your weight, although you don't know why. On occasion, you take your blood pressure at the drugstore, buy a bag of potato chips for lunch on the way out, and purchase bigger shoes because your feet are swelling. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? We're going to start with you, Eric.
I'd say jeopardy based on, first of all, the potato chips. And I would assume just buying the bigger shoes while ignoring the possible cause of the swelling feet, that's also a dangerous thing to do.
Absolutely. What do you think, Bobby?
Well, you're definitely in jeopardy.
All right. Lauren?
In jeopardy, 100%.
All right. And Sarah?
Well, I will agree with everybody, and in jeopardy, especially if you have to buy all new shoes.
Absolutely. How expensive could that be, huh?
It could be.
That could be horrible. Mm-hmm. Now, you offer something at the Welsh Home, a telehealth monitoring system that will help folks with congestive heart failure?
Correct. If a patient comes to the Welsh Home for a short-term stay prior to going home, our goal is for them to be successful and really educate that patient and their families on what some warning signs are. And to do that, we also have a state-of-the-art telehealth system, which is in each of those patients' room, which asks them and cues them, and we educate them on taking their weight, their blood pressure, and their pulse ox every day, and then looking at those trends and making sure that if there are adjustments or warning signs, that that's recognized. So when they go home, when they continue to do the same thing, they're able to do that.
I think the education system that you guys offer when they go home is phenomenal because we're self-educated, mm-hmm. and your education system is fantastic for that.
Right, and that way they wouldn't need assault police like you, right, Bob?
That's right.
And well, my mom loves her potato chips, so don't we all? So
yes.
Yeah. We should do a whole segment on congestive heart failure sometime. You guys willing to do that?
Of course we are, anytime.
Yeah, I think we need to. All right, question number 3. You are a short-term resident in a rehabilitation facility. Each day you are escorted to the therapy room, even though you are tired and don't want to go. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? What do you say, Bobby?
You're safe. Therapy is the main thing. I mean, I remember when your mother was in, I won't name the facility.
Please don't.
But we had to beg him to come and do physical therapy. It was a disaster.
It was a disaster.
It was a disaster, let me say it. So I think you're definitely safe.
All right. What do you think, Eric?
I'm not sure. I wonder if there are some situations in which jeopardy might be the right answer. I don't know if someone's body being tired, if that's like their body telling them something. They're not really up for therapy today. It might harm them.
I actually like that answer. Mm-hmm. I actually really, really think that's important. Maybe we'll touch on that in a minute. Lauren, what do you say?
I agree with Eric. I was going to say that you can be safe or you can be in jeopardy. I think it can go both ways. If someone is really having a hard time and they're really struggling and they don't want to go to therapy, it's our job and our duty to make sure we're investigating what else is going on. While we do need to encourage everyone to be going to therapy as much and as often as possible for their healing process, if they are refusing, there may be an underlying cause to why they're refusing. Mm-hmm. It's another reason we offer therapy 7 days a week. Most people would be able to receive therapy per their insurance 5 days a week. But, you know, people have off days, especially maybe someone with CHF. Did they eat the potato chips last night and they're swelling and they're filling up with fluid? Do we need to take a look at that? So maybe a day off isn't always a bad thing, but it's nice to be able to have therapy every day of the week. So if they do take a day off, the next day, we're right back at it again.
Excellent idea. And Sarah.
I'm just going to have to go with ditto.
Yeah, what she said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ditto, I like that.
No, I agree. And I can see both sides to this, especially since we experienced the one side where we never got therapy. But then as you three are saying.
Well, it's
got
to be a reason.
Exactly.
For not having therapy. But when you ask for therapy and they don't show up, then that's pretty bad.
Right. And that's a strong case for taking a look at that whole patient and not just laser focused on therapy. What's really going on mm-hmm. with the patient? All right. Question number four. You are a resident of an assisted living home. Each morning you are awakened at 7 o'clock for breakfast. You are offered a bath at 11 and dinner is served at 5 o'clock sharp. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? Who wants to start with that?
I'll be happy to go. You know,
Sarah.
If you chose to get up at 7,
yeah.
Breakfast
at 7, bath at 11, dinner sharp at 5.
If that is what the patient or the resident chose to do, you're safe. If that is a timeline prescribed by those that are giving the care, I would say that it would be a jeopardy situation.
Okay. What do you say, Eric?
I have a feeling I'm going to get this wrong, but I want to say safe because having a normal routine like that is a good thing.
Eric always brings that other side, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The sensitive side.
He is. The naked mole rat plushy side. Lauren, you have a comment for that?
I would say, like Sarah said, if that is your routine and that's your chosen routine, then great. I mean, it is wonderful that they're being offered breakfast, shower, and dinner. Those are all wonderful things. If I was that patient, though, I would be in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Giving me breakfast at 7 o'clock is not going to work in my schedule. So it depends on the patient,
yep.
You know?
Bobby?
I think it definitely depends on the patient, and it depends on the timeline of that patient, what that patient's accustomed to, and what fits that patient the best. You got to look at the patient and look what's best for the patient.
Right, right. I think choice, the option of choice needs to be given. At the Welsh home, do you have a strict schedule? How does that work for folks?
No, we provide for meals about a two-hour window for each meal, several choices, alternates, as well as they can call down to the kitchen and even get additional beyond the traditional alternatives, mm-hmm. if you will. As far as the daily routine, we really do try to ask. And if the resident can't tell us, we also try to ask the family, what was their routine? You know, were they a morning person, shower, or evening? You know, what was their routine if they're unable to tell us that now? So we really do try to reach out and understand what everybody wants.
I like it. So we could be safe or not safe, jeopardy or not. So we're all winners on that question.
You got it.
Yay for us.
Go for it.
All right. Go naked mole rat. Last question. You are about to be discharged from the hospital to a rehabilitation facility. Your nurse offers the suggestion of 4 potential places. You haven't heard of any of them and know nothing about them. You ask, which would you use? Your nurse picks one and off you go. Are you in jeopardy or are you safe? Who wants to be first?
I'll start it.
Okay.
You're definitely in jeopardy. Unless you've investigated and gone and visited all the places and pick the one yourself, you're in jeopardy because you can't rely on just one person to tell you which way to go. We experienced that.
We did, yep. What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I would say jeopardy for pretty much the same reason. Wonder if there'd be like a home that maybe would pay off the nurse and in order to have her suggested to you.
Well, just for the record, we're not aware of any kickbacks necessarily, but what is out there is the opportunity, I'll say Jeopardy. I guess I'm answering.
Okay, yeah.
I'll say Jeopardy. But the number one thing that I think people need to do is go and visit. And it's within the first 30 seconds to a minute that you're going to know if you have a good vibe or not. Mm-hmm. That tour mm-hmm. really, I think, solidifies how people feel about a different facility from one to the other.
That gut reaction. What about you, Lauren? Jeopardy or Save?
I would say that you're probably in Jeopardy from an ethical standpoint at the hospital. They are not supposed to specifically recommend a facility. They are to provide the information and educate the patient based off that information. However, it's up to you to make your own choice. You have to be your own advocate, your own family member's advocate, and the choice is ultimately yours. It's not a nurse at the hospitals. It's not a social worker at the hospitals. It's not your best friends. It's your choice. And like Sarah said, visit the facilities. Go at off hours. Go on the nights. Go on the weekends and see what they really are like, because mm-hmm. things can change from daytime to nighttime to daytime to weekend time. Mm-hmm. And that's really important for you to be your own advocate.
Ooh, that's a great piece of advice. That's a great way to end our Jeopardy game. And so we suggest all along that folks become empowered and educated and informed ahead of time before the need arises. So you do offer a tour, a free tour of the Welsh Home. Tell us about that, where it is, where we can find you, and all of your contact information.
Yeah, the Welsh Home is located in Rocky River on Center Ridge Road. We are most known for being behind the pond, across from Giant Eagle and next to the Honey Baked Ham. So our actual physical address is 22199 Center Ridge Road. We offer tours whenever they're convenient for you. So you can call, you can stop in, you can pop in, and we are more than happy to give anybody a tour around the Welsh Home.
And I strongly suggest that folks take you up on that piece of advice. Wow. See, this was fun and easy.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was
can I
game?
Add something, though, real quick?
Please do.
I said I hesitate to offer reference of a nursing home to go to. I mean, I always tell people to go to the Welsh Home, but if that's not convenient or something like that.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us. Sarah Cook from the Welsh Home, thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much, Pat, for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And Lauren Teschner from the Welsh Home again. What
thank
a pleasure.
You. Thank you. It's great to meet all of you as well.
We're going to do more of this. And Bobby, always good to spend time with you.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. It's never ending.
And Eric, of course, it's always a pleasure to be here with you.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. We're all rolled up and wrapped up into patient safety. And we always say, what other patient safety radio program is there that can share this type of life-changing information?
What other patient safety radio show is there?
That's right.
There's not one.
There isn't.
Well, we're excited to be a part of it.
Well, I'm glad that you are a part of it as well. Folks, be sure to visit the Welsh Home, welshhome.com. Give them a call, 440-331-0420, 331-0420. And don't go anywhere, because there's a whole lot more patient safety tips and tools coming up. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yay, naked mole rat.
Naked mole rat.
That was probably my favorite part, actually.
No.
I'm Jerry the Germ, here to spread healthcare and hospital safety tips all over the airwaves. Here's our expert, Pat Rulo.
Hey, Jerry. Just the other day, I went to the doctor and actually found that I had a hard time asking him to wash his hands before touching me. Healthcare-acquired infections often occur due to lack of proper hand washing and glove protocol. So how can you speak up without appearing rude? Start the conversation by saying nothing at all. Hand your healthcare provider one of my Stay Alive icebreaker cards. It says, I'm concerned about healthcare-acquired infections. Please wash your hands before touching me. I tried it. My doctor read the card, chuckled, and washed his hands. What a great way to open the dialogue and create a safe experience. The cards are available at our website, speakupandstayalive.com. Sorry, Jerry, but you're going down the drain.
Stay safe. Listen to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Tune in every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 right here on AM 1220 WHKW. For more information, go to speakupandstayalive.com.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety. Once again, we covered a lot of territory today, and I hope you were inspired by our young guest. A terrifying health experience or diagnosis or anything negative that happens to us in life can often be turned around to be something positive, well, Maybe not for us, but for others who can learn and find comfort or encouragement from our experience. So I hope that's the takeaway today. And our guest next week has the same type of takeaway in that she experienced a horrific childhood, abandoned by her entire family at the age of 11, and forced to live on the streets of Detroit for the next 6 years, hiding under people's porches, eating garbage from city garbage cans. And now, as an adult, speaks especially to young people about the importance of speaking up. It's not really a patient safety message, but it is a message that resonates with me as she stresses the need to speak up. You'll be crying and cheering for her at the same time. So please be sure to come back next week. Same time, same place, but never the same information. And meantime, head over to the website speakupandstayalive.com to get your very own copy of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, Your Hospital Survival Guide. You'll be glad you did. That's speakupandstayalive.com. Or call me and you can order by phone, 440-725-5462. And our 2016 speaking calendar is filling up. So invite me to speak today to your group, club, business, church, hospital, any type of an organization, as long as there's people, I'll be there. 440-725-5462. I look forward to meeting you and your group. Well, time to go, and I will see you again back here next week. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week, free from cats and bungee cords. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Hi, I'm Pat Rulo, hostess of Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, heard right here every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Give the gift of summer this winter with a discounted season pass to Pioneer Waterland and Dry Fun Park in Chardon, Ohio. And that includes free parking for the entire season. Family pass for $4, $195. Order your season passes today at pioneerwaterland.com or by phone, 440-285-5200. That's 440-285-5200.